Good morning. Good morning. So if you haven't yet had a chance, we're going to be using Poll Everywhere in the first part of our session today. And you can respond to the poll by going to the URL pollev.com/our code, which I'm sorry is my name, RobinKatz664. Or you can actually send text messages. You will send the text message to the number 22333. This is on the top of the slide. And in the body of the text, you will put the code RobinKatz664 space your vote, A, B, C, D, or E. So we're getting a read on the room of who has actually used the standards. Looks like about a quarter of us are just hearing about it now. A quarter of us have been meaning to read them. And a quarter have been actively implementing, and other people in between. So welcome. And you are in a seminar called Do Your Metrics Measure Up? And we're going to talk about assessment and implementing the new standards. So my name is Robin Katz, and I'm going to introduce us to the standards. These are the standardized statistical measures and metrics for public services in archival repositories and special collections libraries. There was a joint task force for 2 years?
Yeah.
2 year joint task force between RBMS and SAA, the Society of American Archivists. And we have Christian DuPont is in the room, if you want to wave your hand. He was the RBMS co-chair of the joint task force. On our panel today, Moira Fitzgerald was also on that joint task force. And they were charged with developing a standardized statistical measure. And I want to highlight a few aspects of the standards for us before we hear from our presenters. The goal was to have precisely defined practical measures so that we can start establishing practices in the profession for statistical data collection. But it's important to note that it was beyond the charge of the task force to create an instrument. So setting the metrics, what we count, how we count it, is different than developing the mechanism through which we're going to collect that data, analyze it, or report it. The standards are the foundation, perhaps, for that kind of work. And the standards were really designed, I think, impressively so, to be lightweight so that repositories of any size or budget can implement them. So there's only one required measure in each of the 5 domains. So the idea being that one person who works part-time could use a pencil and paper and keep track of the most basic measures, and everything else is optional or advanced. The measures do not include qualitative assessment of user impacts. That's not part of the scope of the standards. And it does define measures, and it recommends some performance metrics, but it doesn't require any. And so it's worth noting the difference between a measure and a metric. Measuring is just counting. How many of something do we have? In our case, of course, that's going to be processes or transactions, something about the service happening in public services, in archives and special collections. And a metric is more of a ratio. So this is how we can think about not just the number of reference questions, but the number of reference questions per week, per month, per semester, per year. And metrics can also help us quantify or compare changes. So did we have more reference questions this month as opposed to the same month last year, as opposed to last month? Are Tuesdays busier than Fridays? That kind of thing. But again, these are just recommended in the standards. The measures are defined, and there are ideas for how you can use those measures to create ratios, to compare and see change. And finally, this is all quotations from the standards themselves. The point of this is not to reduce the work that we do to just numerical inputs and outputs. The idea is to establish a common vocabulary so that we can start talking about the value that we add, understanding our service, understanding our impact. We are going to hear from 6 people today. And we will have a slide introducing each of them before they talk with affiliation and contact information. But I'm Robin Katz. Here we have Jamie Burton, Amanda Hawk, Moira Fitzgerald, Mal Goja, I should have asked Mike. How to pronounce your last name, Mike. And Elizabeth Call. And first up, we have Jamie.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Jamie Marie Burton, and I'm the Director of Research Services and Education at the University of Kentucky. Just a brief introduction to our institution. We're the flagship University of the Commonwealth's public university system, one of just two land-grant institutions in the state. We're the largest R1 university with over 30,000 students at this point, 95 undergraduate programs, over 100 master's programs, 30 online programs, which I think will double by next year. They're really working on that. I'm sure a lot of people's institutions are doing the same thing. And then we have over 60 doctoral programs. So the Special Collections Research Center, we serve students, faculty, and researchers from all 16 colleges in all disciplines and in all programs. So specifically in relation to the metrics, we were somewhat half informal, half formal level, collecting a lot of the basic measures and even some of the advanced measures already when the metrics came out. So we were really excited to have something that we would be able to use specifically, like Robin was talking about, to align with other institutions and to make sure that the values that we were looking at were going to match up with what other people were looking at, because we're trying to figure out how we fit into the larger schema of other R1 institutions in the United States. Certainly for us, it's about making the case for more resources to do the work that we do within the library system itself, but also to demonstrate to faculty and to students the value that they can have from all of our different programs, particularly for me, the education program, our active learning and primary source teaching. But then how do you then show that the students that are coming into the research room, continuing their research, how that fits in with the class sessions and fits into student success. So that's where I've sort of been focusing a lot of my efforts in this. So we've been collecting data now since April 2016 in the AON system. And then my research services archivist, Daniel Weddington, who is somewhat of a user experience archivist who's trying to restyle research services with a new perspective, he implemented a system that joins up Asana, which is a project management system, with JotForm, and a lot of our reference, actually most of our reference now, comes through this system. So everything's mobile, online, the students are sending us reference questions, actually community people are sending us reference questions at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's very convenient, and so we've definitely noticed an uptick in that. And then we're of course using Google Analytics and LibGuide statistics for other parts of the measures. So I needed to learn how to use Tableau, which I'm still learning. It's a complicated system, data visualization. That part I don't think was as hard, but the back end of managing all of that data within a database system, all the tables, making all the connections with that data has been tricky. And I've had to learn a lot more advanced functions in Excel in order to massage all of this data. We've been pretty successful. We've done one of the first things we were able to do with the AON data and some of the reference data was to prove that we did not have to open at 8 o'clock in the morning. Nobody was coming until 10 o'clock. And people were not staying much past 4:30. And so with about a year of data, we changed our hours to 10 to 4:30, which allowed our staff to be much more efficient. And of course, with AON, you're pulling things ahead of time, and we were able to build that time into our services. So that's been a big impact, I think, just on quality of life for us and lots of other things. A much faster turnaround for scanning requests, and we've been able to add special collections to the IPEDS reporting, which had never been the case for the library before. I'd certainly say our biggest challenge is just time. Data takes a lot of time to work with, and I'm not a data analyst, so I'm a little slow still working with that. I've been on an assessment committee for our entire library, and we're hoping to hire some data analysts moving forward for assessment across the board. And then I'm also in the Public Services Assessment Committee under RAO on SAA, and we're hoping to partner with more folks here in RBMS to put together an official quick guide. Amanda Pellerin and I are the co-chairs of that committee. So that's what I'd like to talk about with folks in one of the breakout sessions, is how that quick guide can work for you. And then feel free to contact me about that and also the campus student success data. So real quick, right, 4 minutes. So this is one particular graph that was very helpful. We were able to pull data out of both Aon and Asana and demonstrate. These are two separate graphs, and the first one is students from different colleges across the university that came to Special Collections. And then the bottom graph are students who are enrolled in those programs. And you can see that we're kind of right on target with enrollment. So just because we don't have a whole bunch of students coming from, say, the College of Public Health, that's actually because the College of Public Health doesn't have as high enrollment as the College of Arts and Sciences. So we were able to show that we're actually pretty well aligned with our student population as far as users go. And then this is one of the challenges I think the metrics doesn't address is how do you pull a lot of these metrics and data points together to show a bigger picture and tell a bigger story. And so I'm trying to demonstrate how when students come to Special Collections, they use all of our resources, that the accumulation of all of that actually leads to a greater amount of student success and GPA, graduation, retention, and all of that. So we're hoping that that data pans out. And then finally, this is the graph showing that nobody comes before 10 a.m. All right, so that's my time. Thanks very much. I'm going to hand it off.
Oh, because I didn't activate it. That's why. Is it working? All right, well, we'll skip that one and hopefully have more polls.
All right, good morning, everyone. I'm Amanda Hawk. I'm the head of public and research services at Louisiana State. I started at LSU about a year and a half ago in February of 2018, and it just aligned really well with the approval of the guidelines by ACRL and SAA, which had actually just happened in January of 2018. And so, you know, coming to a new university, it was a perfect time to evaluate the status of existing services and policies and also review and update the measures and metrics being collected. And so I took the time to read through the guidelines, kind of decide, take a survey of what we were already collecting at LSU, decide which recommended measures we should add to our tracking, and then which we didn't really need to worry about at the moment. And so everything that we've implemented has been since about July of 2018. And then here's just a few examples of how we're using the statistics that have been collected so far. There will be many more uses in the future. And here's a snapshot of the different domains of the report and the tools that we're using to collect those statistics. So basically, at LSU, we use primarily Aon and the SpringShare system. But my biggest success so far in using the new measures and metrics has been to overhaul the way that we count and record reference questions. When I started at LSU, there was a paper tally sheet at the reference desk every day, which is, you know, other people use paper forms at the reference desk. But the interesting category here is correspondence, towards the bottom there. That was every email exchange that someone made with a patron was recorded as a tally mark. Not each reference question, but each actual email with someone. And so looking at the report and understanding that, you know, what is a reference question, it's you know, multiple exchanges with someone over a course of time is just one question. We've sort of used that new understanding to move to an enhanced LibAnswers form, which is on the right side. And at the same time, I added some of the other recommended measures from the guidelines, such as time spent and question purpose. So that's a lot more robust, and it's all part of a data set now, whereas before reference questions were printed, filed by the patron's last name, and it was not easy to get data from that. We also use LibInsights for tracking outreach events and special collections instruction, which are part of the guidelines. And these forms really help us to run reports and data visualizations. Oops. Oh, I thought I updated that. And then this is an example of what you can, the data you can get from Atlas BI, which is a product provided by Aon. I believe this is data from 1 month showing different statistics like the day of the week, the check-in time, you know, average number of visits, how long people are spending in the reading room. And so we use this data for collecting more of the guideline reports. And here's my very basic spreadsheet for the monthly statistics by domain from the guideline report. And I just want to emphasize that even if you don't have tools and services like Aon or SpringShare, you can still set up a very easy Excel sheet like this and be tracking your monthly numbers and pull reports from that. So some of the challenges we still are facing, even with, you know, guidelines and standards. It is still difficult when there's lots of people recording statistics to keep things accurate and make sure, you know, items are measured uniformly. One downside to the LibAnswers database is that you can't really change things in mid-course. So if I need to make a change to how we want to present data through that, I need to wait till the fiscal year, make a whole new, you know, make my changes and re-implement that at that time. And then one of the primary questions is, how do we avoid duplication or underreporting of reference questions? Either forgetting to put something in the database, or maybe there's multiple people working on a question, or they've passed it off to someone else. How do we make sure that doesn't get counted too many times? And then I think one of the areas that's sort of missing in a way from the report is how to really measure the impact of remote researchers. Mm-hmm. So you can sort of compile statistics like email or phone reference and duplication orders that you receive from people outside of the library, interlibrary loan requests. But how do we really know the unique number of remote visitors? Because some people may be doing multiple of those things. So I think I'm just trying to think through how the best way to get at that and really show that in addition to what we're seeing in the reading room, we have a lot of traffic coming in from outside of the library. And then finally, just at LSU, this is a problem measuring exhibit visitors. That's part of the report. And I think it's just the way that our space is set up. It's hard to record how many people are coming to look at our exhibits. So that's an area that I hope to think more about in the future. So here are some topics you're welcome to contact me about in relation to the metrics. And I'm also on SAA's Committee on Research Data and Assessment, and we're looking at some of these same problems as well. So please, you know, welcome to contact me about that.
Is that gonna work? Hopefully.
I don't either. Oh, well.
No problem.
Good morning.
We're experimenting with pull everywhere. So I'm the primary source literacy teaching librarian at UC Riverside, and I actually recently moved from the special collections department to the teaching and learning department in my library, and I'm happy to talk to any of you about that outside of this seminar. But before I left the special collections unit, I was piloting the draft standards as they were being shared with the community. So the task force shared initial drafts, and we were kind of following along and trying to implement them. We led local conversations about what we actually wanted to measure and why, because so many of the measures are optional. And one of my main goals before switching departments was to write a really detailed manual for the Special Collections Department and to decide on tools for collection. And I was able to report for the first full year of actually using the standards. For each of, oh, did I say five domains? There are eight domains, just kidding. So for each of these eight domains, these are the ways that we collect data. These are the tools. So we are very fortunate to have Aon. We do still use paper slips for reference transactions and reading room visits. We also get some reports from our ILL department, who handles some of our interlibrary loan. We use Qualtrics, a survey tool that UCR subscribes to. We have a wiki where we actually keep just some tallies in a centralized place, similar to using like a Google Doc or something, as well as Excel. And for online interactions, we use Google Analytics by partnering with our IT staff and our digitization staff. We have paper tallies, or that was actually a new thing when I got there. And there was some debate about that. One of our AULs wasn't thrilled with the idea of paper. She thought it was ancient. But based on where our staff was, it was actually the lightest way. So that each staff, every week, the students put a piece of paper on the door, and they can just tally it. They don't have to do data entry. They don't have to remember to log into a system and duplicate or overcount. And then student workers do the labor of collecting and entering that data into an Excel spreadsheet. And so I stand by this decision, even though it may not be the right one for everyone. We also use Qualtrics to create a tracking form for our events. And this, in addition to aligning with some of the measures, includes an evaluative component. So there's a place to say, like, what went well and what didn't. And the things I wanted to focus on was doing that paper slip to Excel data entry, as well as using Atlas BI, the business insight, you know, analytics tool provided by Aon. And one of my main goals was that anyone who comes into the department look at anything would have alignment with the standards and the manual. So 2.1 is the way that in those domains each of the measures is indicated. And then we actually also added a lot of measures that are not in the standards. And so in our schema, those get a letter, not a number, so 3.A. So this is the Excel spreadsheet that the students enter the data in. It's made to actually reflect and like resemble that paper sheet, so that when you look at it really quickly, like where the box is that says one, you're just kind of entering for quick data entry. And we have a lot of formulas to tally by week and by term and by year. There's also a place for that drop down. Some of the things we added was consultations we do. So we track the duration and number of people in a consultation. That's not exactly allotted for in the measure. So that's something that that's a local measure example. And then we actually used Atlas BI. And so we worked really, really closely with staff at Atlas. So many thanks to Stephanie and Katie and someone else who I'm blanking on. Jeannie, yes, thank you, Jeannie. And so you can see here in our dropdown, a lot of the default ones are kind of at the bottom, but at the top where you see 1.0 and 3.0, that's where it kind of aligns with the standard. So when you look at everything, 1.1 user association, 1.2. And so we did a lot with them in terms of customizing the slider tool so we could actually report by fiscal year. That was a customization that we did. And within that, you can shrink down and look at segments of time, can actually get data there, and you can see how we kind of try to align with the measure. So if you want to talk about that, a lot of them are just boring counts. You can see that 4.6, 4.B example here, so that anyone could open the manual and understand what aligned to what. So happy to chat about those things later. There's a lot to still do, but I'm not in the department anymore, so I could also point you to my colleagues. And my high school stats teacher always said, counting is difficult. Oh, yeah, Mr. Snodgrass.
Okay, so good morning. Yale University, we have a lot of special collections in one institution, 7 within YUL, the Yale University Library System, 2 outside, and actually I realized 3, I forgot one at least. Very varying sizes, volume, systems. Some are largely used in common, like Aon, although we use them in different ways, I've discovered, and with different local processes. And we don't have Atlas BI because we're self-hosted. That's a long story. And there are also a lot of homegrown and siloed systems that have occurred at different repositories over the years. In 2014, our Library Executive Committee, which is mostly AULs and directors, came up with a list of data points that they wanted to see us in Special Collections tracking. And that predates the standard. It was given to me in 2014. And I was largely responsible for ensuring that the Beinecke Library, where I'm the head of access services, was tracking these things, and I did that to the best of my ability. But recently, as the standards came out and as there's more interest at Yale in centralizing things, a task force was charged, was convened by LEC. I chaired this task force. We started in April, so we're still in the midst of this. And the first thing we were supposed to do is map those LEC data points to the standards and make recommendations where the two diverged. And then phase two, which we haven't started yet, create a dashboard to display graphically all these data points for YUL special collections as well as individual repositories. They should include all the elements of the LEC data points. And once that's been done, the task force is encouraged to think about ways in which other data could be collected and represented, including tours, lectures, concerts, and other programming making use of our collections. Easy peasy, right? The good news is that a lot of the LEC data points mapped up pretty well to the standards, so walk-in patrons, or reading room visits, reference transactions, instruction activity. Some not so much. Reprographic activity in the standards is really tied to ILL, which represents a very small percentage of our overall reprographic activity, but that's fine. We can track whatever we want to. We're not limited to the standard. Collection management was also one, particularly moving collections around at Yale. That's a big thing. Most special collections repositories do rely on offsite shelving. At the Beinecke, we have two locations now, so we're basically, our tech services unit is in a different building. So it's basically three locations that we're moving things around, and that's taking up a lot of staff time and resources, so we definitely want to get that sort of recorded. The other thing is when we went through, we asked each repository to kind of say where they're tracking different pieces of information, and not surprisingly, there's a lot of variations between the different repositories. So the Law Library is still not using Aon. They have no plans to do that, so they're using a different system for user demographics. People are using mostly LibInsight, but because that's Yale University Library's tool, but we also have someone using an Outlook plugin, a lot of other different things, county forums, exhibitions and events. There are also some activities that not everyone does, or that not everyone even records. Some places, Beinecke records building visitors as opposed to reading room visitors. For some repositories, that's less of an issue. Exhibitions are one where there's a lot of variation. So we definitely have a lot to do. We definitely noticed that our administrators really want to see a lot more information about reprographics, instruction, social media outreach, and movement of materials that weren't in the standard that we're going to have to be tracking. One of the things we really want to recommend is a reporting database. So when you're getting information out of different systems like LibInsight and Aon, I guess best practice, and this isn't my area of expertise, is to have all this, rather than pull it separately from different places, is to have all that data into one database and then pull from that one reporting database. We need a lot of IT support to do this, which we may or may not have, but we're going to recommend that. We're also going to recommend consistent systems and practices as much as possible. There's a lot of debate about Aon versus LibInsight for certain types of activities. These are just a few dashboards I did in Tableau. Using Aon data, this is in transit, circulation. I'll just go through these kind of quickly. And then I want to talk a little bit about collection use. This is a top 10, or actually top 15 list. Our communications person really likes these top 10 lists, and he often asks me, give me the top 10 items in the reading room or the classroom so he can do these nice lists in our annual reports, which are a lot of fun. And I'm basically just doing this by call number, so I'm just taking everything that's been checked out under a certain call number. And that, of course, privileges big archival collections. So this list of archival collections pretty much doesn't change year after year. And we have great Langston Hughes, Gertrude Stein. These are sort of the popular collections or popular, most requested collections, I'll say. But I was talking to him about different ways of going about this because we have a lot of collections that don't really share a call number. And in Aon, really the easiest way to do this is with a call number. And I'm not even sure there is another way. I haven't really thought about it too much. But I did a different grouping, so I used the Osborne Collection, which is early modern British, and our medieval manuscripts, which also get a lot of use. And I kind of grouped them under a call number as if they all shared a call number. And also our incunables, which up until recently were always cataloged with a ZI in the call number, and kind of grouped them. And then I saw this list change a bit. And I just point this out because I think there's a lot of, it's great to collect the data, but you also have to sort of analyze it a little bit and look at what's telling you. Neither of these is wrong. It's just showing you different uses. And I really want to stress that just because a collection's highly requested does not mean that it's in any way more valuable or more interesting. We just want to know what people are coming to us for. And I also just want to mention one of the reasons that number 9 was so popular is because there's one person who comes in and checks out the same box from that collection every day. So again, great. I'm glad she does that. But I'm not sure I would put that collection in our top 10 for that reason. So I also added in unique patrons. I know some people have done more with cert count and unique patrons and sort of doing calculations there. So there's a lot of things, fun things you can do for just showing people. This is a map of where our patrons are coming from, and this is a word cloud of some of our classes that have come in, just so that there are a lot of fun things you can do with data and with the standard as well. So, conclusion, if we're having so much trouble just within one institution to homogenize data, I can only imagine the challenges we're going to see when we try to do it across our profession. Doesn't mean we shouldn't try. We're just starting right now with two Google spreadsheets, analyzing the data. Also, we've seen that what high-level administrators and what middle managers want are different. And also, the shared systems have gone a long way to help us make progress, but we have a long way to go. So thank you.
Sorry.
That's okay. Good morning, everyone. My name is Małgosia Myk, and I am Head of Reference and Academic Programs at the Behnke Library at the University of Michigan. This is the title of my presentation. The Behnke Historical Library is an academic independent library at the University of Michigan, which means we are not part of the university library system. We report directly to the provost of the university. The Behnke has more than 11,000 collections and other primary source materials from the state of Michigan and the University of Michigan. More than 3,000 researchers every year are using those collections in our reading room. In addition, we developed strong and comprehensive instructional program to teach our undergraduates, which focus on on-site learning and research experience. Along with Aon implementation, we have also developed a business intelligence strategy. This is the library-wide initiative that I lead. This effort has been undertaken to have a set of data to be systematically collected, harvested, and reported for the benefits of the Behnke Library's operation by making more informed business decisions to set the processing, digitization, and the collections development priorities, identifying areas for improvement, for instance, research experience and environment. And we are using data to raise the visibility of the library on and off campus and to document and prove the importance of the library's role in undergraduate education. Data sources. Aon is the main source of our public services data. Its functions, especially its ability to capture and store the data indefinitely, was the main inspiration behind our BI strategic development. We created the Google spreadsheet to list the data we track. Originally, the regular reports were located on our shared drive. I have a printout of the whole document with all of the data if anyone is interested after the session. Following the SAA guidelines for standardized statistical measures for public services, we made some changes in our homegrown list of data we tracked. So we expanded some of the existing domains, in some cases changing their names, and we combined or regrouped some of the data within the existing domains. Some examples here, reading room visits report. It includes the number of the first time visitors, users checked in, and visits length. Creating a reports templates for using data collected by Aon system was a challenging and time-consuming process. We found out that the report builder was not very friendly, but as the specific templates were created, generating reports was a matter of minutes. Here you see user demographics by researchers' status and affiliation. Collections use report. This data was extremely helpful. This plus all of the collections at the screen of the at the end of the screen here. This data was extremely helpful in moving our offsite collections to new, much larger offsite space. I can tell you more about this process in the breakout session later. We used Aon not only to document the collections that are the most frequently used, but also so-called negative data for the collections that we were not using very often, or researchers were not using very often. That helped us to relocate the collections in the new space as well. Last fall, we adopted the Atlas BI platform, which is included as part of our subscription to Aon. It provides an impressive range of features that greatly enhance our reporting capabilities. The dashboard provides stronger visualization, ability to have pre-configured and ad hoc reports. And here you see the standard Aon user analytics report for the last 12 months. Having the BI strategy implementation in place and a powerful dashboard, we made changes in reporting format and frequency. So we stopped generating the monthly and biannual reports. Instead, we do on-demand reports. These can be done either by a designated committee member or by individual staff member as needed. We continue, however, to generate the end of the semester reports, and the first one is coming at the end of July, we will generate the end of the fiscal year comprehensive annual report. Here you see the instruction and outreach end of the winter semester report. To generate this report, we used the Aon data, users, collections, and the class activities, as well as the activity attendance report that is on our Excel spreadsheet. In addition to quantifiable metrics, we are interested in qualitative data, such as researchers' evaluation of our services quality. During the last 3 years, we intentionally increased our reference team presence in the reading room, and we wanted to know what effect has our presence and interactions and improved services had. Since the SAA guidelines did not include or address qualitative data collections and assessment, we developed a survey instrument ourselves. Our team collaborated on ideas for what exactly should be asked in the survey and how, and the administration of the survey as well. Here is the survey, and we will be talking more about that if anyone is interested in our breakout session. Just a sample of survey result. Responses to the question of overall use experience were very gratifying for us. What we learned and changed after the analysis of the results, we can share it again later. So, collecting the online interactions data is the work in progress, and we can talk also later if anyone is interested. And Caitlin, who is working on that part of the project, is here, so she will be happy to talk to you about that. Thank you, and here's my question. Thank you very much.
Now it's going.
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Liz Call, and I'm a Special Collections Outreach Librarian at the University of Rochester, Rare Books, Special Collections, and Preservation. I forgot the preservation, but RBSCP, it rolls off the tongue a little bit faster. All right. So the title of my brief talk, I'm going to talk for like 2 minutes, guys, because we got a lot of stuff to do in the breakout sections, is From Crisis to Practice and Back, A Continual Revolution in Standardization. Yes, I do like to do spinning on the bike, so that's what inspired this title. So I have a confession. I had been questioning the point of all of this. Yeah, seriously, continually. I was having an existential crisis about what the point of having measures and metrics were at all. But after much reflection and the very important need to prepare for the seminar, I have found the standards help with training and education of staff to get within a department so that we are all on the same page, or at least the same chapter. Having a document that has been vetted and published by national professional organizations such as SAA and RBMS has a lot more weight than anything I could as an individual put forth. I think it's mostly because it's seen as an outside and neutral party. So I really want to emphasize that. It's just like, please, let's have more. Because then we can point to something when we're in our departments and say, hey, look, you know, we got to do this. And people are like, okay. So it isn't directly connected to me as a person, right? I'm not saying, no, I want this. But more importantly, the importance lies within having a shared vocabulary. And this actually comes from conversations with Robin, who constantly talks me off that existential ledge. And she's like, you know, it's important lies in the shared vocabulary within the department and across institutions. Out of the darkness comes definitions and standards, a framework to work off, a starting point. So that's really where RBSCP really is. We're at a starting point. We saw some really fancy things going on, a lot of data. We're really like keeping it basic, really focused on the reference. So when I got there, we didn't really have a shared definition for reference. And we actually, our stats kind of reflected that. It was kind of a crazy situation. So just starting off with how reference is defined in the measures and metrics, you can actually just read that. But it's not about directional or informational, right? You're directing people to resources. You're referring people to resources, whether they be internal or external from the institution in which you work. And so basically, we went from something like, we went from a crazy number, like from to a more realistic number. So we started tallying reference with this reference question. So we went from 981 reference questions, like for a year, from 670 that were collected for 1 week. I'm kind of jumbling that. So just to emphasize, 670 questions in 1 week, pre-defining what a reference question was, to for an entire year, 981 questions, right? I think that's key here, because, and I just want, not to shame anybody, I should have like blanked out names, but I don't have last names there. But for example, like our exhibits manager, who's fantastic, he tallied in that one day, he had 23 questions. I was like, no, reference questions aren't like, how are you, right? They, you know, so anyway, I thought that's really key, because I think that it was kind of eye-opening. All right, so we built a transaction form. I used Google, very low-key, we don't have Aon. I'm actually happy with that. I think Aon would put me in a darker hole. I'm sorry. I mean, I know Aon's awesome, guys, but I'm not ready for it. But we did Google Forms, pretty low-key, but I would say if you want to implement Google, to definitely make sure you create a generic account. Do not have it tied to your personal account, because we want to think about sustainability, right? So if you leave a job, which you will do eventually, hopefully, right, and you move on, it's not tied to your account, and you can more easily transfer it out. Okay, so here's just some of the things we did with Google Forms. So we get some fancy pie charts with Google Forms, and it's interesting, and we weren't able to resolve all of the issues. For example, I was not able to eliminate some of the extraneous details people wanted to track, like, you know, initials to who's answering questions, but that's fine. And that's basically, it's a continual work in progress, a continual revolution, right? It could be eventually that we'll be able to eliminate the need to track how many questions a person responded to. That might come with building up trust within the department, trust that people's work is recognized and valued. And so numbers do not have the ability to articulate and demonstrate value, no matter who the audience is. Value is a subjective and qualitative. How is it defined is completely audience dependent and is completely ephemeral. And so I just really leave the question of, you know, how do we demonstrate value, right? But shared vocabulary is a great place, a great starting point, a great framework to get started on. Thank you.
So we will hopefully leave up our last poll slide later, which is an open response of, like, why do any of this? We'd love to hear from you. We'll come back to it. Hopefully it'll load. But we're going to go into our first of two breakout groups. So group one will meet in the front, group two to the by the TV on that side, and group three to the TV on this side. So if you're interested more in talking about tools that you can actually use for data collection and analysis, come to the front. If you want to learn about that quick guide and progress from SAA and hopefully other organizations, go to that TV. And if you want to talk more about qualitative analysis, which is outside of the scope of the standards, go to that TV. We'll have another set in 20 minutes of different topics. And also I want to stress that anything that our speakers talked about today, that they may be a resource for you. Oh, I want to learn more how to do this, how to do that. We know we can't get into the weeds here, but we want to be resources for you beyond this seminar. So feel free to find a group that speaks to you, and we will chat, and then we will switch. And hopefully we'll leave up this poll as well and get to hear about your existential crises. It was like just spinning. So, and anyways, with our time, like, what were we going to do, sit up here for 5 minutes? So it was fine. It was fine. I guess I should make...